Maine, and this is your friendly neighborhood podcast about living in Iraq,
where we both lived for a combined 11 years.
That's right. So we know all the things.
Except for the things we bring in the guests for.
So this week we have a special guest. Our very first male guest. Welcome, Steve.
Yay!
Thank you.
And as we talked about in our previous podcast, Steve is going to talk to us about language learning, and specifically Kurdish. But you speak other languages too, right?
Some German, yeah.
And English.
And English.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Southern English.
Oh, good. Just making sure.
Yeah. Just so y'all know.
Great.
Okay.
So I guess we'll start with, can you kind of explain, well, maybe we should start with explain why we're talking to you, of all people. I mean, Colleen speaks some Kurdish, I speak some Kurdish, but you are a little bit more into Kurdish than us. So
yeah, I mean, I love the language, and I love languages in general. Mm-hmm. Took a couple of years of German in high school, and then, of course, when we decided we wanted to be with Kurds, it was just a natural thing to want to learn the language. So,
how long have you been learning Kurdish?
Well, I'm almost ashamed to say, because I don't know it as fluently as I'd like to, but I've been studying it for almost 23 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So okay, so that
should be perfect. But
that's why you win over either of us.
Yeah. Because you've actually, like, really, like, studied. Like, have you ever gone to classes or used textbooks?
I had one class, actually, here. There was a tutor from a local language school that helped us. And, yeah, I've had textbooks from a worker over in Kurdistan.
All right.
Yeah. So do you know, like, the history of the Kurdish language? Like, what, or maybe just, like, what family group is it in as far as language?
Yeah, I think most people would be surprised to know that it's not related to Arabic.
Oh, really?
Because Arabic is a Semitic language. Kurdish is an Indo-European language. So it's actually closer, I think, to us than it is to Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, of course, if you're in Iraq or even, I guess, Iran to Syria, where they speak Kurdish, they borrow a lot of words from Arabic, just like they do from Turkish and from Farsi and from English.
Mm-hmm.
Just like we borrow words from French and Spanish and everything. So,
is there like pure Kurdish, or at this point is it just kind of like English that we just kind of steal other languages' words?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in my experience, it's been mostly a mixed thing. Although, if you talk to some Kurds, and I'm sure you guys have as well, a lot of people would say Hawrami, which is spoken along the border of Iraq and Iran, is the purest Kurdish, the oldest Kurdish. And I don't speak. I think I know two words of Hawrami, so that qualified me as a speaker. But I would guess that even that is not today purely Kurdish.
So
pure Kurdish.
You say you only know a couple words of Hawrami.
Yeah.
Like, is it still Kurdish? Like, how can you have, is it its own language, or is it, how does this work with Kurdish?
Well, it is Kurdish. And even like the book that I looked at, Mehrdad Azadi's book, which is good. I looked at some other websites and stuff like that. You know, it says it's Kurdish. Like, even when I see people on Facebook interacting in Hawrami, if you know the Sorani dialect, then you can pick up a few things. But I think they use a lot of sh sounds. Like, the two words I know are Wushani and Hashani. So it's not mutually intelligible, I think they say. But that's true of other dialects, too.
So how many dialects of Kurdish are there?
Well, it depends on who you talk to.
I feel like everything in Kurdish is that way.
Yeah, in Kurdish culture, that's the way it is. You know, everybody has their own opinion. But this book, which is now almost 30 years old, so it needs some updating. But I thought it was interesting that he said in here that there are only two Kurdish languages.
Oh.
Or two primary groups, he calls them, Kurmanji and Palawani. And underneath those two, you have, like, Sorani would be part of Kurmanji, Badini would be part of Kurmanji.
Oh.
And then the Palawani would be, like, all the Gurani, Hawrami, okay. Zaza, those groups like that.
These are ones that I have never heard of.
I mean, because the ones we dealt with the most often in northern Iraq were Sarani and Bedini. Mm-hmm. Like, that's and the only ones I heard.
A little bit of Kurmanji or Syrian.
And I heard of the Hawrami in Suli.
Okay.
I have but more than that.
Yeah. I mean, too bad you're not video. You could see this intricate...
it's like a giant
diagram
tree.
Here, yeah, of all the branches from Kurmanji and Palawani. And some of them break down even to tribal languages and also city. Like, you have one here called Sulaimani, which is where you lived, which is the dialect that I'm trying to learn.
Okay.
So it really does depend on who you talk to, because I was looking before we got on the air at the Kurdish Regional Government website, and they just break it down into Sarani and Kurmanji, or the two main dialects. They call them a dialect.
Uh-huh.
Azadi calls them languages, you know. So it really does depend on who you talk to as to how they break everything down.
Because I feel like Badini and Sarani, they can understand each other to some extent. So they don't feel like completely separate languages to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's the V and the W sounds that get changed out, or like some of the letters that get dropped.
Because I say Choni, and you say...
Chawani.
So it's just
and in Syria, they would say Chawai. So
it's close.
Right.
But not quite. And if you're not paying attention, you're definitely... Like, you could not understand.
Right. And I guess, like, if you're a Kurd from, like, a village that has only really interacted with the people in your village, and you, like, meet a Sarani speaker and you're a Badini speaker, I could see how there would be, like, misunderstanding, or not kind of being like, oh, you're speaking a totally different language from me.
Right.
Do you think the language will change as Kurds start to mix more?
Yeah, probably. It was interesting, too, when I was on the KRG website, the regional government website, too, they were talking about how today the Badini speakers and the Sarani speakers can either understand each other or speak to each other in both dialects. And in my experience, that's not necessarily true from the Sarani side.
Right.
Because,
agreed.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of the television stations, well, they do have both dialects, you know, when they're doing reporting and stuff, but... I've heard that the Sarani is the literature language.
Right.
And so more Badini speakers can understand Sarani than vice versa. Mm-hmm.
I also found that from my experience at Badini especially is really small, but that Sarani felt like a slightly simpler language than Badini.
Yeah, that's
Badini.
What I've heard too.
And so, like, Badini had some gender and some verb tenses and things that Sarani didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even if I spoke Sarani, people could understand me, but when they spoke Badini back to me, I was lost.
Yeah. I mean, I do a Facebook show every week with a Badini speaker, and more every week I'm beginning to understand what he's saying, but still it's different enough that you really have to work at it. So.
Yeah. It was interesting to move from a Sarani speaking village city to a Badini speaking city, and my brain can't always make the dialect switch between the two. I definitely speak more Badini than Sarani at this point, but yeah, I remember trying to talk to the corner groceries guy and asking him how much something was, and he was like, I don't know what you're saying. I was like, but this is the Kurdish words I know. And just getting really frustrated by it, and then realizing, I left off, the syllable at the end that is, the action syllable, the action word of the sentence that in Sarani you don't need, but Badini you do, and it was a little bit frustrating to make the changeover.
Yeah.
And then most of my American friends speak Sarani Kurdish, so it's never worked for me.
Well, language learning in general, it's not easy. So, and when I first started learning Kurdish, I started learning Badini. Because most of the refugees who were coming in here were Badini speakers.
Mm-hmm.
But then in 97, when more Sarani speakers came in, I decided, well, I want to relate to both of them. So I started learning both of them at the same time, and that was a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then for some reason, I just switched to Sarani. Yeah.
And you lived in Erbil, which is Sarani speaking.
Right.
Do you feel like that helped Like, do you feel like you gained more language that way, or just being here and interacting with?
Well, I mean, I was only there for 5 months, so.
Oh, yeah.
And I had already learned some Kurdish, but the dialect that I liked the most, and maybe it's just out of laziness, is the Sulu dialect, because they leave off letters and stuff like that.
Well, and that works with Southern English.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so, it's pretty much the same.
So I had an affinity for the Sulu dialect, so trying to pick up some of the things that are different in Hilaire or mm-hmm. Erbil took a little time.
I lived in your house after you moved back to the U.S., and the neighbors were always like, where is Steve? His Kurdish is perfect. And I was like, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, they're always exaggerating things about everything. You know, the most beautiful, the mm-hmm. biggest, the most perfect. Yeah, so that wasn't true.
Well, according
but
to
I
them,
tried.
It was.
Yeah.
Well, they were very upset that I didn't speak any Kurdish. So thanks for making my life
difficult. Yeah. Sorry. Hope I left it clean, though.
You did, okay. Yeah. So what about written Kurdish? Are you learning that as well?
Yeah, I can write, although not as beautifully as Colleen can. Hers is perfect.
Oh.
Yeah. No. Yeah. But my English writing is terrible, too. But I can write it. I can read it. And I really didn't know much about your question here, which was, how long has it been a written language? Yeah. I didn't know that. But somebody... or some place that I read said it was back in the 7th century they started writing it. Okay. As, you know, because it's related most closely to Persian, then it was sort of a tweak of the Persian language when okay. they started writing it. And it was interesting. I was just thinking, another website that I looked at, the Google search that I did was Kurdish as a written language. So the title of this was something like, almost the same thing, Kurdish as a written language. You go to the website, and it's all about Persian.
Oh.
So, you know, which shows, again, how close it is to it, because I'm hoping to learn Farsi
mm-hmm.
when I get to a certain level in Kurdish, and even the stuff that I've learned so far, there's, you know, closeness to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap. Sometimes I can understand, like, really small things, like numbers or the words for boy and girl in Farsi, because... if they're not the same, they're close enough that that's what it triggers in my head.
Yeah.
And so some of the refugee women that I've spoken to here that are, you know, speak Farsi, they're like, I was like, wait, I think I just understood that you have three boys.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Which is really exciting.
Yeah.
For sure.
So what alphabet, we talk about it being written, what alphabet does Kurdish use?
My understanding was there were three. Something I read said that there was actually a fourth. But they write in Arabic script, they write in Latin script, Cyrillic, and the fourth was like an Armenian something, but I don't know what script they use there. But yeah, the majority of Kurds, which are in Turkey, use the Latin script. And even though Kurds in Iraq use, and in Iran use the Arabic script, it's not exactly... just like Arabic, you know.
Right, there's some altered...
Yeah, right.
Because they have different sounds, too.
Right.
Because Arabic and Kurdish are both phonetically written, is that right?
Right.
Sort of?
Arabic's less so. They leave out the vowels.
So the Kurdish will change some of the letters sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the...
to reflect that.
Like we call the month of fasting in Islam Ramadan, with a D. Arabs would say Ramadan, I think. And Kurds don't have the sound, so they change it to a Z.
Ramazan.
Yeah, so Ramazan.
My favorite place where sometimes that came up is the Pepsi, because Arabs don't have the P sound, but the Kurds do. But because on the side of the can in Arabic, it's written Bibsi, even the Kurds would pronounce it Bibsi. And then I'm like, actually, you know, in English, it's Pepsi. And they're like, oh, why did the Arabic people do this?
I mean, there is a push now, I don't know how heavy it is at the moment, but to have sort of a pan-Kurdish alphabet and language. I don't know, I kind of doubt that it's going to happen, because we all know how tribal that culture is anyways, and you know, they hold on to what's closest to them. And
I was going to say, sometimes it seems like the choice between Badini and Sorani almost seems political, in a sense that like Badini speakers are all for this party, and Sorani speakers are all for... this party. And so if I spoke to someone in Sorani, I would kind of get a like kind of look, like, you don't want to speak Sorani, you want to speak Badini. It's like, okay. I don't know.
Yeah, I got that too when I went to the Badini speaking area, mm-hmm. and you know, spoke Sorani. They understood it, but they didn't like it.
Right. They didn't. They wanted to correct it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I can't imagine a pan Kurdish language being easily implemented at all. Yeah.
I mean, right now, I think I read an article last week about them trying to make sure that both Badini and Sorani are taught in all schools so that everybody speaks or, you know, has access to both. Mm.
Is there even a comparison? I feel like we need to give a comparison in English between Badini and Sorani, but is there one?
Well, I think Azadi in his book said it was like German and Dutch.
German and Dutch.
Well, no, that was the relationship between Kurdish and Persian is okay. like German and Dutch. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's probably the same with Badini and Sorani because, you know, there are a lot of similarities, but, you know, like Colleen was saying about the gender, the pronoun differences mm-hmm. in the two dialects, it's not one for one for sure.
Yeah. So it's even more than like if a Creole speaker was trying to talk to someone from New Jersey. It's a bigger difference in language than that. Because Creole has, like, that French mixture into it.
Yeah, I almost feel like, because there's a guy at Home Depot that is from that area, I think, and I can't hardly understand him at all. But I think it's just the way he pronounces the mm-hmm. words. It's not that the words are different. But with Sorani and Badini, of course, you do have a lot of different words.
That's true, yeah. Mm-hmm.
For example, like in Sorani, for child, you would say Mandal, or in Suli, they say Manal. Drop the D.
Drop the D.
And then Badini and Kurmanji that they speak in Turkey and Syria, they would say Zarok.
Yeah, totally different.
Yeah, so
not
totally
even related.
Right. Yeah. So you just have to learn it. And, you know, when I was visiting refugee families here from Syria, Kurdish families, and they kept saying Zarok, 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 and I'm thinking, what is that? So, just had to learn it.
Are there any sounds in Kurdish that were particularly hard for you to learn?
Yeah, they have a H sound. That wasn't hard at all because they have that in German, which I learned. But the biggest one for me was a rolled R. And really, if it's in the middle of the word, it's even harder for me.
Yeah.
Or at the end of the word. Like the word for faith or belief, bauer. See, I still can't. I can't roll the R at the end.
You got it some, yeah. Bauer.
Yeah. And really, even some native Kurdish speakers roll it more than others do. But, you know, when you write it, there is a diacritic mark that shows that it's supposed to be rolled. Or, and I don't even know what the translation of this word is, but the word is hreirawi. Hreirawi, you know, so that's
multiple
even harder.
Rolled R's.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So, and they also have the sound which is hard for me, but it's not as hard as a rolled R. Mm-hmm. So if I had taken Spanish in high school,
right,
I would have had a lot easier time with that.
But maybe a harder time with the
ch. Right, exactly.
Which is, like, I feel like that's the harder sound for me, are those glottal sounds that it's like, I can't, but at least it's not Arabic.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you think learning German gave you some tools to learn Kurdish? Like, do you think you learned some things by learning German that helped making learning Kurdish easier?
I don't know if it gave me, like, specific tools beyond knowing one sound already. Mm-hmm. But it just, you know, piqued an interest in me to learn languages. And it's interesting that there's actually a connection between the German that I learned and the Kurdish that I had tried to learn later, because when I first got interested in Kurds, it was Kurds in Germany.
Oh.
And of course, most of them would have been speaking Kurmanji, so mm-hmm. if I would have gone at the time that I hoped to, then I wouldn't be speaking Sorani. So anyways, I just think that it helped sort of light a fire in me to learn language.
Get your brain kind of working in that.
And I've been to Germany a few times, and, you know, most of them speak English fine, but
do you feel like immersion is the best way to learn, or it's the best way to start out, or?
For me, it would be. It's almost a crime to ask me that question, because you would think after 23 years I would be able to teach the language, but it's because I'm not really self-disciplined very well. Mm-hmm. And because I've had plenty of other things going on, but
yeah,
you have like 5 kids and
Exactly, five kids.
Lots of stuff happening in your life.
Yeah. Sure. But I was talking to a friend the other day, and when she first got introduced to Kurds, she studied language for 2.5 years, you know, 12 hours a week with a tutor and in books all the time, and now she's, you know, she's great. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could have been able to do that. And so I, in that respect, I think it is better to, like, mm-hmm. pour yourself into it for a certain amount of time as much as you can. Like another friend that we all know lived with a family for 1.5 years in Kurdistan. So, you know, can't get much better than that.
Right. When you are forced to use it and learn it in order to survive.
Yeah, and I do think, these days it's a lot easier for people to, because of the internet, mm-hmm. you know, and there's so many resources available online, mm-hmm. YouTube videos and Facebook and,
Do you have a favorite Kurdish word?
I do. Papula.
Papula?
Yeah, it means butterfly. Butterfly. Although I have told people before, I like to write little jingles on the side, and I thought about taking all the compound words in Sorani and making a song out of it, like, Kelupel, Hichupuch, Kesukar. They have a lot of those. And so I guess you would say Hichupuch is a favorite word too, because it just sounds.
What does that mean?
Well, I know Hich means nothing, Pooch means nothing, so I guess nothing and nothing means really nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Yeah. So.
Yeah. That is a great word. It's really fun to say.
Yeah. And I'm sure Badini has those fun words too, but I don't know.
I'm sure they do. I had a student that tried to get me to say the word judge, I think, in Badini is like really difficult to say.
Really?
Like it's all those glottal stop sounds. And he would say it to me and I'd say it back to him and be like, no. It's this. And I'd be like, that's exactly what I said. But there was something in there I was missing every time.
Well, that's funny because that reminds me, back in 2008, we were in Erbil for a camp, and I was teaching music to these kids, a particular song, and I was giving instructions, and all of a sudden this little girl, probably like 1 foot tall, raises her hand. She says, "Mister, it's not what I said," and she corrected me. It's like... Okay. I'm trying.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Well, if it makes you feel better, I had students correct my English when I was teaching them. And I was just like,
really?
That may be grammatically correct, but no one actually talks that way. Like, no.
Hey, at least you were able to give your instructions in Kurdish. I don't think I ever gave instructions in Kurdish.
Not much beyond Danisha.
Yeah. Sit down.
Or bedang, yeah.
Patangba. So what would you say are, it's like, the first 5 words somebody should learn in Kurdish?
Hello, stop, please. This is not one word, but what's your name?
All right.
And then say how to ask what's your name, yeah.
So what are those? Hello?
Soni, or Chawani.
Chawani.
Stop.
Rawasta. You see how I got that rolled R at the beginning?
Yeah.
But if it was at the end... I can do it.
I think the other word that I know for stop was more like wait is bosta.
Yeah, they say that. And they also take off the hra and just say wista.
Mm, yeah. Yes.
I've seen that, I think, on stop signs before. Just wista.
I think in, and I could be completely wrong, they say bus, which I think is really like enough.
Yeah.
But it also can mean like if you're in a taxi and you're like bus or busa. It's like stop.
That's where bosta and that are probably related. Mm. Okay, please.
The real word is takaya, but they say bezahmet, which is Arabic.
Okay. And then, what's your name?
In Sorani, Nawitia. Mm-hmm. And then, Badini?
I think it's the same.
No, Navitachia.
Navita?
Navitachia.
Navita.
Yeah. And that's where that va and wa come in.
And then, my name is...
Naviman Steva, or Nauiman Steva.
No.
Yeah, the va-wa thing, I told this to some people last week. I heard the joke about it again the other day, which a Sorani speaker asked a Badini speaker, so what sound does your cat make? Is it meow or mi-vow? Or miav, miav. Miav, yeah. Instead of meow.
Meow, meow.
Yeah, because that is a big difference, of course, between the two dialects.
Uh-huh. Right, because just the word for water, like, is alv or au.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that got me into trouble, too. Because they were like, I don't know what word you're saying. It's not a real word. And I was like, I just want water.
One other question I have for you that I know is something that surprised me in Kurdish greetings was that it's not like an American greeting where you just say, hi, how are you? And like start your back and forth. Can you describe your experience of Kurdish greetings?
Yeah, it's like 5 minutes of this asking the same questions, you know. Hi, how are you? How's your family? How are your children? How's your mother? Hi, how are you? How's your children? How's, you know, they go on and on and on. And even the leave takings when you're saying goodbye, even on the telephone, it seems like it's the same thing. And I don't think it's because they don't have anything else to do but talk, but
and do they,
they're longer than English.
Wait for the response?
Very shortly, it seems.
Yeah. To me, it seemed like it was just, like, two people, like, answering those questions, like, in a continuous stream, and, like, you could throw
like
in...
Like, talking over each
like
other.
Like, just talking over each other, and, yeah. like, you could throw in anything in there, goldfish and pancakes, and I actually tried that once, they didn't seem to notice, so, yeah, it wasn't that what was being said necessarily actually mattered as long as, you know, you found out that everybody was okay.
Yeah. I'm sure that varies from family to family, so I don't know that it's necessarily a lack of concern for you, but no. It's just the Sir culture.
It's just the way it's
like
done.
It's this ceremonial thing that you have to get to before you can start, like,
having a conversation.
Having a good time.
Yeah.
I would always laugh at my neighbors as they're on their phone and, like, pulling the phone away from their ear but still talking and just talking, and then hanging up. It's like, okay. And I knew enough to hear the same word repeated over and over, and I was like, all right, you're not just, like, hanging up in the middle of conversation.
And, of course, every language has those quirks.
All right, now you gotta do my favorite Kurdish word, which is snail.
Yeah, what was that? Hedka Shetanoka?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Helka Shetanoka.
Which means, literally...
The egg of Satan.
The egg of Satan. It just makes me laugh so much.
I think the other day after you told us about that, we like, mentioned it several times and laughed about it very hard in our house.
Yeah. Such a great word.
Well, I did notice that that's also the word for clam, too.
Oh.
So I guess all those circular...
Slimy things.
I guess,
circular slimy things are the eggs of Satan.
Eggs of Satan.
Dang, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, that is one thing that I really love about Kurdish is it's much more descriptive, it seems like, than English is. Even the names. We were talking about this with a friend that came by the other day because he met my wife and was introducing his daughter and... why he named his daughter that and what it meant and stuff like that. Like, for example, there's a friend that we all know, Shina. And I think you actually pronounce it Shina, which is like the slightest breeze or something like that, mm-hmm. a real gentle, almost like a breath. Mm-hmm. Or like the word Hanasa. I think I've heard some people name that before, but it means... breath, mm-hmm. or kanar, which is where the beach meets the water. Mm-hmm. You know, just really descriptive mm-hmm. things. And we would never call somebody beach or breath or revolution like they do or something
that.
Yeah,
or friend.
Like you would name or tear, friend. Mm-hmm. You know.
Actually, I do know a kid named Friend.
You do?
Well, you're from the
must
weird
be from California.
Northwesty
no?
part
it's
of the world.
Same kind of
okay,
world.
Okay, okay. Hippie commune or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, but yeah, everyone there, their name means something, mm-hmm. and they know what their name means,
yeah.
and it's like... It literally means that. Like, it's the same as the word for that. So, yeah, I met girls who are named after all sorts of flowers and mountains and breezes and, like, streams and rivers and, like, different types of water.
And I love that about it.
Yeah.
So when you say egg of Satan, then say, yeah.
Okay.
I can see it.
I can see how that works. Yeah. Well, thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's good to be with you. 30. I was a little disappointed at first, to be honest with you, because I thought you would say, "Hi, I'm Hannah. Hi, I'm Colleen." I would get say, "Hi, I'm Steve."
Do you want to say hi? I'm Steven.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. Hi, I'm Hannah.
And I'm Colleen.
And I'm Steve.
And today we're going to talk about... I think we should say goodbye in Kurdish, though.
Chwahafis.
Chwahafis, mamnun.
Chwahafis. Chwahlegel.
Yeah, chwahlegel.
Servant Group International on Facebook or Instagram, or on our website at servantgroup.org.
Yeah, and if you have a question that we haven't answered yet, send us an email or Facebook message. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.
I'm not an Instagram or Chit Chat or whatever that thing's called, but
Snapchat.
But I'm sure they have resources on there.
Chit Chat would be a great name for an app.
I'm sure there probably is.
There probably is. Some 17-year-old making $1 million off of it. I don't know.